When is a man a failure? When does he or anyone else have the right to say that he has sunk too far down to be saved? For an answer, we give you the true story of Camilo de Lales, gambler, tramp, and by grace of God, a saint. Camilo is one of the world's myriad children of misfortune. He is born in the Italy of the 1550s, a rough time and a rough country. His mother, poor woman, does her best to raise Camilo in the right way, but she is quite outmatched by the father, one of those gay, good-for-nothing gentlemen rogues who've been the heartbreak of their family since time began. By profession a soldier, he has the gift of throwing a cloak of high adventure over his shiftless gambling ways. And Camilo, of course, worships this father. The boy lives for the father's random, unannounced visits, and each time the mother sees her patient teachings blown away like thistledown. The boy grows up in the image of his father. It isn't long before the two of them, father and son, finish their job and break the mother's heart. She dies when Camilo is only 12. From a sense of duty, relatives take him in, they feed and clothe him, they give him no love. Nobody wants him. At 17, he runs away. He heads straight for an army camp, lies about his age, and joins the same regiment to be with his glorious father. And there it is, spread out before him, the life of his dreams at a time when the armies were filled with thieves and bandits, the bold, free life of a common soldier, and the voices of the camp are in his ears.
Camilo, come on, bring out the dice.
Hey, Camilo, come on, let's have a little game with the cavalry. They got paid today.
Oh, this is a good town, Camilo. The wine is strong and the women are weak.
Camilo listens and he learns fast. By the time he's 19, he knows everything. That is, everything bad there is to be learned. His father teaches him the ways to cheat with dice and cards. But neither he nor Camilo is very clever, and they're very bad losers. Everywhere they go, they become centers of trouble. Often they get half the regiment fighting. Finally, their commanding officer comes to the end of his patience. He has Camilo and his father march to the edge of the camp, and he puts it plainly. Go enlist with the enemy, which is the greatest favor you can do to us. Camilo and his father go swaggering off. One army pays as well as the next. They hear that an army is forming in Venice to fight the Turks, so they're off to Venice. But there happens to be a plague in the district they are passing through, and the father comes down with it. For a week fights a losing battle. Camilo watches, dazed and hopeless, beside his bed. For the first time, the boy has met an enemy who can't be run through with a dagger. His father makes his peace with God, then he dies. Poor Camilo. The world crashes around him. To get this wastrel father of his a last resting place, he has to beg a grave in a potter's field. He and the priest are the only ones who pray beside that grave. Camilo lingers there, a lanky, raw-boned youth, who realizes now the meaning of the word alone. Where can he go now? What's he to do? He keeps hearing his father's voice, the strange words of a dying man.
Camilo, don't go back to the army. Stay away from gambling in the camps. Don't throw your life away as I have. What have I ever done except hurt people? I killed your mother. I ruined you. God forgive me. 60 years and all wasted. Camilo, do something good with your life.
Poor Camilo. He does not know what to do. To make matters worse, he's developed an ugly running ulcer on the right leg. He couldn't go back to the army if he wanted to. and there's no use returning to his hometown. Nobody there wants him. But what to do? He hobbles a few steps down the road. Then he sees two men coming toward him. Two Franciscan friars in robe and sandals. They swing by him with a smile and a God bless you. Camilo stares after them. He thinks wistfully of their ordered life. They seem to know what to do. They have peace and security. Suddenly an idea takes hold of him. He thinks of his father's plea for him to do something good with his life. He remembers that he has an uncle who is the superior of a Franciscan monastery not too far away. And then and there he makes a vow. He'll become a friar. He starts off for the monastery as fast as he can hobble.
No, Camilo, you're not ready to enter a monastery. You're still upset by your father's death. Now, the best thing for you to do is find an honest job and work at it, say, for a year. Keep away from gambling and get over your other bad habits. Then come back and we'll see. You don't become a friar by taking off a soldier's coat and putting on a robe. And besides, there's that leg of yours. No order could take you in until that is healed.
Camilo wanders off again. He has never worked in his life. As you might guess, he goes back to gambling. But luck, you'll remember, was never with him. Before long, he has nothing left to gamble with. Besides, an ulcerated leg gives off an odor. Nobody wants you around. He becomes desperate. He limps and hobbles his way to Rome. Someone tells him about the hospital of San Giacomo, where sick people with no money can work for their treatments. The hospital accepts Camilo and sends him to serve in the wards. These are packed with the sick and dying poor. The only attendants are patients like Camilo. They are rough and untrained. They hate their work. The place is called a hospital. It is an inferno. Camilo goes to work. In the ward, something happens to this hard-fisted trooper, this tavern brawler. When he touches the sick, his hands become soft, like those of a mother. The voice softens. He holds the dying in his big arms until they fall asleep like children. When someone asks him in some surprise how he can work so cheerfully in this house of horror, he says only, "I was a soldier, I know what it is to be alone and to be in pain." He does not say that for the first time in his life, he knows he is doing something worthwhile, that he is wanted and needed, and that it feels very good. Then he spoils it. He has some free time, and he doesn't know what to do with it. What's the harm in a little game of cards? It's against the hospital rules, but nobody's going to find out. And night sessions begin in Camilo's room. Attendants start sneaking off duty to huddle in corners and shoot the dice. After that, it's the old story. Camilo gets into fights, he disobeys orders, he neglects his duty, he is warned, he pays no attention, and they at last throw him out. Well, so much for trying to work and lead an honest life. His legs healed enough for marching, and it's back to the army again. But somehow the life of the camps doesn't bring the old thrill. He is sick of it and disgusted with himself. He stays with it because it is all this man knows. And then one day he puts an end to that too. He gets into a dice game where he loses all his pay, as usual. And to try and win the pay back, he puts up his gun, then his sword, and finally his coat. He loses them all, and he is not a soldier anymore. He is down to one torn shirt, one pair of ragged trousers, and the last reminder of his military life, a soldier's belt. He is a tramp. Along the road, he falls in with another ex-trooper named Tiberio. This Tiberio is loud and bold, as Camilo's father had been. He acts as if he knows where he's going, so Camilo follows blindly after him. It doesn't seem possible that the two of them can sink lower, but they do. In a little town called Manfredonia, Camilo loses the last thing he values, which is his pride. for he stands at a church door and he begs. He doesn't even make a good beggar. People take one look at this big, hulking fellow and put him down as a bum too lazy to work. One man finally stops. The man studies Camilo.
I have a job for you. My name is Antonio de Nicastro. I'm building a monastery for the Franciscans just outside of town. I need all the help I can get. Now, if you want the job, come to my house this afternoon, and I'll give you a note to the foreman.
But as we might guess by now, Camilo doesn't come for that note. All he means to, all right, until he goes to say goodbye to Tiberio. Tiberio laughs at his face.
You work? A crazy soldier you've turned out to be. Come on, let's get out of the town.
That night, Camilo and Tiberio bed down in a barn 12 miles outside Manfredonia. But there is no sleep for Camilo. Two voices keep sounding in his heart.
Turn back, Camilo. Turn back. There's honest work for you in Manfredonia. There's the good, clean life.
Gambling's in your blood. You'll never get away from it. You've tried, you've failed. What's the use? And you couldn't stand being shut up in a monastery. Now, you're young yet. The whole world's ahead of you. The fine, free life.
It's God who's offering you this chance, Camilo. You don't deserve it, but he's being good to you. Are you going to turn your back on his mercy? What will become of your soul?
When Tiberio wakes up in the morning, he is alone. He knows where Camilo has gone. He shrugs. All right, be a fool. But for Camilo de Lelis, this morning is the dawn of a new world. For the first time in his life, he has had the courage to make up his own mind. The rest is history. It would be unbelievable if it weren't true. Camilo works for a year at the monastery. He is so faithful that the friars accept him into the order. But the ulcer on his right leg breaks out again. He has to go back to the hospital at San Giacomo. At first, they don't want to take him in, as they remember him entirely too well. They finally give him a chance, and what happens after that is incredible. This wastrel, this tramp, this weakling, whose whole life was undermined by sin, has become the most devoted, the most expert attendant at the hospital. In a few short years, he's chosen director of the entire institution. He turns the inferno into a house of peace. He finds that souls need healing more than bodies. So, in his late 30s, hardly able to read or write, he goes back to a classroom with little boys and forces his slow brain to master Latin, Greek, philosophy, theology, and is finally ordained a priest. Back at the hospital, the other priests rally to him. He trains them, organizes them into a religious order of hospital clergy. They spread out everywhere, rescuing thousands upon thousands from epidemic, fire, flood, and starvation. War strikes, and they rush to the... On their cloaks, they wear a red cross, the sign of Christ's sacrifice. For the first time in history, the Red Cross shines as a light of mercy through the smoke of battle. And long before Camilo de Lelis dies, everyone knows that he is more than a hero of charity, more than a savior of countless thousands, that he is a saint. What changed this shiftless, hollow beast man into a saint? What lifted him up from the gutter to heaven? The grace of God, the love of God. How can anyone despair? How can the lowest give up hope in God's mercy when there is a Camilo de Lelis?
This episode of The Hour of St. Francis, entitled God and the Gambler, featured John Nesbitt as narrator. It was written for radio by D.J. Talley. The cast included Patrick McGeehan with music by Bob Mitchell. God and the Gambler was produced and directed by Father Hugh Noonan and has been brought to you by the Third Order of St. Francis, whose members with St. Francis pray, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love.